anyway. People die.
Safe living, dangerous life.
A car on the street, a bomb from the sky.
This is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and this month's show will visit several acts spanning the 70s and 80s. They will include bands from San Francisco, Massachusetts, and Canada. And I'll finish up with an interview with one of my favorite recent artists, Levi Kreiss. The song that started the show, of course, was referring to AIDS, and was called Safe Living in Dangerous Times. It was by the group Automatic Pilot, and was one of the main songs in a musical mounted by San Francisco's Theater Rhinoceros called The AIDS Show in September of 1984. But the group Automatic Pilot goes back a few years earlier, to 1980. In that year, the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus was at a retreat, and two of its members, Carl Brown and Matthew McQueen, wrote an original punk rock parody song for a skit. It went over so well that others quickly joined to form a group, sort of an offshoot of the Chorus. For a name, they turned to a quote from the testimony of a psychiatrist for Dan White's defense and his trial for killing George Moscone and Harvey Milk. He sort of went on Automatic Pilot. For the next few years, the group did many performances around the city, and they were billed as San Francisco's satiric, erotic, jazz wave ensemble. Along the way, one of their members, Tony Kremitas, became their producer, and they were working towards professionally recording an album when he died. This was 1985, and the momentum was lost. Fortunately, their material was not lost, though it took 20 years to resurface. 2 years ago, founding member Carl Brown produced the release of two albums of their songs, with the first appropriately called Automatic Pilot, Back from the Dead. From it is the song, Are You in Love?
What if you could never have it? What would you do? Would you suffer? Would you turn blue? Would you throw another tantrum? Would you go unglued? Would you suffer? Would you be rude? What if you could never have it? What would you do? Would you suffer?
Are you in love? 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 love, are you in love, are you in love? What if you could never get it? Who would you fool by your pretense? Acting so cool. Would you throw a temper tantrum? Would you come unglued? Would you suffer?
Toi, viens plus près, ouais, viens m'embrasser un peu, ça fait bien plaisir, plus près encore. Allons jouer ensemble, tu sais bien le faire, tout doucement, tout tendrement, passionnément. Allez, viens ici toi, viens, allez, viens ici, viens.
From 1982, Automatic Pilot and Are You in Love? The other album that's been released is of a live show at San Francisco's On Broadway Theater in 1982, and some of the material was a bit too explicit for some audience members, like this song.
Lights are fading. Please take your seat. My smile will show you the way. Let's have a look at your wildest moon. Sit right here, baby. Enjoy the view. I can tell by your breathing you love it too. My smile show you the way.
Sit on my face,
spread those lips at your fingertips.
Sit on my face, sit on my face,
sit on my face.
Yeah.
Where the water is green and there's plenty of room. The oysters are waiting for cold to say grace.
So baby, sit on my face, sit on my face.
Try your surprise across my eyes.
Sit on my face, sit on my face.
Spread those lips at your fingertips.
Sit on my face.
Face.
Sit on my face.
Of course, that song was not heard during the radio version of this show. It was called Sit on My Face. The group did not shy away from subject matter containing references to sex and substance abuse. One song, called Bobbing for Apples, was about recycled beer, and another was called Rimmin' at the Baths. Much of their material was not ready for radio. I want to mention that Carl Brown has set up a wonderful website honoring the group, one of the best that I've seen in the way he's documented the history and music details, complete with song clips from almost all of their material and posters for their concerts. That's at www.automaticpilot.org. Up next is another San Francisco act, an all-women's jazz band called Alive. Lead singer Rhiannon met Carolyn Brandy and Suzanne Vicenza in 1976 at a jazz workshop, and as Rhiannon described it, the three of us fell in musical love. They were joined by Janet Small and Barbara Borden, and the act was complete, and that lineup stayed the same through their 10-year history. Though they were a jazz band and did not perform only women's lyrics, they were nonetheless very popular at women's music festivals. And I've got a special treat. Here's a live recording of them at the 1979 National Women's Music Festival, singing a song called Spirit Healer.
In the rape of this land, many people have suffered. Oh, where is the Spirit Healer? In the hands of a madness, all the earth is in prison. Oh, where is the Spirit Healer? The children are crying. They can't get enough love. All over this town, there are people going hungry. Won't you look at yourself through eyes of this sadness? Don't you think that it's time for some change? Woman, oh, don't you know you gotta change? And don't you know you're the Spirit Healer?
Thank you.
your spirit either.
The group Alive released three albums together, the self-titled Alive from 1979, Call It Jazz in 1981, and City Life in 1984. And a greatest hits release came out a few years ago, named Always Alive. From their third album, I want to share with you a track called What Is Life?
The distance is far, the rest are few. No one knows exactly what to do. Showing where to go. This trip's a gamble, that's all. Often we stumble, sometimes we fall. People, people, people can't stop trying. Giving up is the same as dying. It's not yours until you give it. What is life but how you live it?
By the group Alive, that was What Is Life? I've got another women's band to bring you. The group was founded in 1972 by Beth Courant and was called Lilith. Lead vocals were done by Lou Crimmins and Janice Warner, and unfortunately, they only released one album, called Boston Ride, in 1978. I'm pleased to share with you from that album the title track, Boston Ride.
Boston Ride.
See you, I'm feeling high. Ah.
Charleston ride. An hour from D.C. I'm gonna fly. Flying high. I can't wait to see you. I'm feeling high. Ah, you know this way. Days it's a long time. Ooh, when I'm giving up. Ooh, you change my mind.
Change my mind.
I can't pretend I can't begin to hide.
Just stand by.
You're a lover and a friend of mine.
It's always a treat for me to interview one of our pioneers, and I was able to track down the founder of Lilith, Beth Courant, for a special interview. Of course, the first thing I asked her was how the band Lilith got started.
Well, Lilith started in around 1972. I had started looking for women to play with in 1971 because the only group, or the only people that were playing, were it was folk music for women. You know, Joan Baez, which is fine, but I wanted more of the pop. And I would try to get involved with playing with men, and invariably they would leave to go on to play with other men and wouldn't take playing with a woman seriously. So I saw the Deadly Nightshade, which was a trio here in Western Mass, and they just kind of blew me away. I said, I knew women could do this. So I started looking for other women to do it, and it was hard to find people that were as serious as I was, and also, you know, not to be hung up on by some, you know, when I was, someone would call, I'd put an ad in the paper, and they'd say, I'd say, it's an all-woman's band, and they'd say, oh, well, never mind, I'm not interested, you know. So that's how that happened.
So the Deadly Nightshade was one of your inspirations.
It was. I had been thinking it was possible before that, and when I saw them, I was on a date, and I saw them playing just for the, in a restaurant in Amherst, and they were just so inspiring, yes. I give them a lot of credit.
They didn't release anything until like 75, 76. I didn't know they were around that much earlier.
Mm-hmm. Well, it takes a little while.
Yeah. And was Fanny around that you saw?
No, I didn't run into anyone from Fanny. They weren't known in the women's community so much. And they were on a whole other coast. Now I have a connection with June Millington, who's living right near me, but they were kind of going in a different direction. And I met her around 1978. She had come to Boston for something, but I think at that time, Lilith was, as far as I know, more popular, really.
How about the New Haven Women's Liberation Band?
Right. They were around. We went out there at some point when we were just, there were just a few of us in the band, I think, to jam with them or something. And they changed members often. But I don't know. They were more in Connecticut. I don't know. We were kind of on a little bit different wavelength. But they were around.
Did you consider or conceive Lilith as a feminist band or a lesbian band or what?
Yeah, that was a big issue. I just thought that I wanted women to play great music, and I was driven by the music, and also this, I'm really a big feminist from the 70s, and, you know, kind of a natural feminist. And there was a kind of an interesting divide in the, you know, there were factions, because there was Olivia Records on the West Coast, but it was music that didn't interest me. The music didn't catch me. It was more folky, and I was really into the whole rhythm, the whole band thing. And also, you know, I wanted the music to move people. So basically, I feel we got some flack from that. People boycotted some of our gigs, the Separatists, because we played music that was written by men. You know, we played cover tunes. But actually, we were a huge feminist statement, and that was part of it. It was like, you get up there and you can do it. You, any women can do this. And people were just blown away by it, not just lesbians, but all women and, you know, straight people as well.
What was the makeup of the band as far as lesbian, straight?
You know, that's interesting. We were all lesbians. No one straight ever came into the band. And I don't think we put that out or we said that. I think there was a straight woman who tried out at one point, and she just didn't fit in musically.
Just happened that way.
I don't know that we did anything that consciously, but you knew. I mean, we were fighting the battle, you know, to be able to do this. And even if we didn't get along, you knew we bond together when we were getting up to do a performance or something like that, because we had a fight to get into clubs. We had to, you know, people were always saying you're good for girls in the beginning and things like that. So we had a bigger battle to fight. But I don't know why that was the personality of the band.
What kind of gigs did you mostly perform?
Well, in the beginning, thank God for the gay bars and benefits. We did many, many of those in colleges, Mount Holyoke, Wheaton College, East Coast colleges. An earlier gig would have been the first Boston Gay Pride in the mid-70s and the Long Island Women's Music Festival. And eventually, in the late in 78, we played the National Now Convention in Washington, D.C. You know, I guess you had to be chosen to play, and we were really popular at that time. And that was great.
How did you pick the name for the band?
Well, when we were just starting, it was just three of us. Two of the women had been in a shelter. They were like street kids from Springfield. They were living in the street in Springfield, basically. They had left their home or something. We were just 20. And a house, a lesbian house, took them in, and they called the house Lilith or something like that. I didn't know this, but I remember the meeting where we looked it up in the Bible, and it was a woman that was radical and feminist, and it worked for us. And, you know, we all often thought that maybe it cursed us, even. I was reading some of these old articles because we had such a hard time getting ahead, and I just think we were ahead of our time, basically.
How would you hope people remember the band?
I would like people to, first of all, to know that we broke ground, and we're not the only ones that did, of course. You've mentioned some of the other groups that did the same thing. That we were not just women, but we were really good at what we did, and it wasn't just a band. It was a place where people could come, and it was a gathering place, like almost like we grew up together. If you mention Lilith to anyone who was around at the time, they'll say, oh my God, what days those were. Because you could gather at a Lilith event and just feel so good. It was so powerful. It was really empowering for lesbians. Just a great place to be. I think just for people to remember their foremothers, you know, their forefounders in this area. That's why I think the work that you're doing on this on your radio show is so important.
Thank you. I'd like to ask that question a little differently. What do you think the role of the band Lilith is in lesbian history?
I think it's huge. I think it was the most popular women's band there was. We had the largest following, very charismatic, you know, obviously pioneers. We broke a lot of ground. We had to be very tough, and we fought for, you know, just what we were. It was natural for us to do that. I just think that we were the groundbreaking women's band. I really do.
Did you also perform at the women's music festivals?
You know, we didn't. That's interesting because when they first started it, you know, we didn't fit in because we were a rock band. It was very folky. And it was also, they wanted to hear you sing Lesbian Lesbian. They didn't want to just hear you be great and be a lesbian statement in and of yourself, because that's what you felt like when you were, when you saw us. It wasn't, you know, I think it's almost like you're on different parts of the continent, being in the middle of the country. And actually at the end we were going to go to the Michigan Women's Festival, but we broke up before that ended up happening.
I have all the copies of Paid My Dues, a pioneering women's magazine from that period, and I didn't spot you all in there.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Now, where does that come out of?
I think the Midwest.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the, you know, maybe there's some elimination going on there. Like, there's a competition thing where, like, we didn't fit into that whole Olivia scene, so we're not going to get in, and we weren't just doing the lesbian songs. I don't think that maybe they were ready for the people that were doing what we were doing yet. It wasn't quite that time, and I don't know that we left ourselves out of it. There might have been a little of that. You know, we were more in mainstream, like Boston Globe and things like that.
How did the record come about?
Yeah, you know, everything is from the grounds up. We managed ourselves and booked ourselves, but there was this woman, Anna Marie Taylor, who had just immigrated, I think, from Italy or something, or she hadn't been here that long. And she heard us and knew that there was something magical, and she had inherited some money and decided to invest it in an album for us, which was incredibly generous of her. People didn't make albums so much, you know. It wasn't like we had a little record company or... So it was, everything was independent, which is why the album doesn't do the band justice, really. But so we found a female engineer, Karen Kane, actually, and she was doing her first album. She had recorded, or her first band, I think. It was the first time she recorded a band, so everything was new. She backed the album, and then there was some discussion about whether to start selling it through the lesbian venues, and there was some struggling within the band about whether they wanted to go totally that way. Of course, I felt strongly that we should, because of the gay and lesbian movement.
And the networking.
That's right. We made it, you know, because they brought us up when we needed it. You know what I mean?
The label was Galaxia. Was that the label of your producer, Anne Marie Taylor?
Right. We were her first record on it. And I don't know that she ever did any more.
She did.
Did she?
Maxine Feldman.
Oh, great. Right. We did a gig with her. I mean, we were in the same Boston community.
Right.
Oh, that's
right.
Great. Can you find that on the web?
You can see an interview with her on my site.
You're kidding.
No.
Oh, with Maxine. Yeah, she's great. Oh,
yeah.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, she's very down to earth. I never met her, but we got along great on the phone.
Let's get back to the band. How long did the band last?
We lasted to the end of 1978.
Gee, the album came out and that was it.
Yeah, the album came out. You know, we were getting, I think, it's just, we burned ourselves out. You know, sometimes we did six gigs a night, six sets a night. And since we were breaking ground, it wasn't just like, and we kept wondering, why aren't we getting picked up? We thought if only we were as good as possible, that was the secret, you know. And then we were really good, accepted by straight audiences and everyone alike, but we wanted to do it our own way. We didn't want to wear miniskirts. We didn't want to sell out. They wanted us to wear little dresses and uniforms. And, you know, basically the first women band to break through was the Go-Go's, and we weren't the Go-Go's. So I think that was part of it, you know, when you're in the beginning, and we pushed it. And so at the end, Bonnie Raitt even came to see us and said she hadn't been blown away by a band in a long time, and she booked us to warm her up, but it just, I think we were just through. We just didn't get the break we needed.
The album contained three cover songs, but the rest of the material was all written by group members.
I don't think we even knew that you should play original material, and I do think that this was a shortcoming, but there was never any conscious talk about you would do anything but be this dance band and play at clubs and play cover tunes. And it sounds like nothing nowadays, but then it was kind of a big deal. Yeah, and then at the end we started writing, and that had just begun, that we started writing, and actually I was amazed that I could write or that we could write, so that's why there were so few originals on the album. In fact, we hardly even played them.
Was there a particular song that was a big crowd pleaser?
Yeah. Basically, we always opened with Pick Up the Pieces, so that was a big hit. And it's because it was very powerful to hear a group of women play that.
Pick up the pieces.
not your average lesbian band. That was a little of Pick Up the Pieces by the band Lilith. Do you have any closing comments about the place of Lilith in history?
Well, I just am so amazed now that I see all these magazine covers with girls on the magazine with guitars, and it's so cool. And it's just amazing to me that that could even happen in my lifetime, because it was laughed at when I was trying to do it in the early 70s. It was not a normal thing for people to do. And you know, when I started seeing people become famous like Sheryl Crow and all that, and I said, yeah, we had something to do with that. You know, that's what I think is important for people to know, that things just don't come out of the air, that, you know, there are women before them or men before them that have pioneered, led the way.
Very nice. And what is Beth Courant doing these days? Well, she currently is co-hosting a radio program called Independent Muse on Valley Free Radio in Northampton, Massachusetts. And she hasn't stopped recording. Here's an unreleased song by her that speaks for a lot of artists.
Sitting in the studio, thinking up some lines. When will I get to hit? I worry all the time. I listen to my radio, I want to be heard there. That is what I really want, to be on the air. Play it on the radio. I go to work all day, then I take the 505 to hurry home to play. I got every new record, I know every lick, but somebody please tell me, why can't I get a hit? Play it on the radio. For me to be too much, but I feel it's getting closer, close enough to touch. Play it on the radio.
Again, that was Beth Courant and Play It on the Radio. And here's another woman's band I'd like to share with you. They were from Canada. Named after an Incan moon goddess, they were called Mama Kia II and were founded by Lorraine Segato, who did the lead vocals. They released just one recording, a 3-song, 12-inch vinyl EP And the song that caught my love for blatant lyrics was this one, Angry Young Woman. Mama Kia 2. The group was started in 1977, and they effectively disbanded in 1982 when Lorraine Segato and drummer Billy Bryans formed the Parachute Club, one of the most popular Canadian bands of the 80s. Now, you may have wondered why they called themselves Mama Kia 2. Well, it was in honor of an earlier band, Mama Kia, formed by Sarah Ellen Dunlop, who died of cancer in 1978. She was a much-loved Toronto lesbian singer, bar owner, and general force in Canadian women's music. Her company, Sarah Ellen's Music, was one of the earliest recording companies wholly owned and operated by women. In 1975, Dunlop released In the Light, an extended play recording of four songs. And from that EP is the song Singing on Canada.
I sure do love my Canada and the beauty that's there for me. Every day I'm more aware of how mellow the land can be. I realize that my country feelings and my love for the continental, for the land you send, has been so much to help me with my growth.
Again, that was Sarah Ellen Dunlop. And remember a while back, I talked about producer and engineer Karen Kane and how the album by Lilith was one of her first projects. That was in 1978, and I have many albums from her own discography. One was from 1984 by an artist named Susan Grates, and Karen did all the production and engineering on that one. All I know about Susan is what I read on their album jacket, so I know she's a guitar and banjo player, and the album, called Somewhere Between, contains about half originals by her and a number of charming reworkings of traditional songs, like this one, More Pretty Girls Than One.
Pretty girls than one. Every town I ramble round, there's more pretty girls than one. As I wander round the town, as I'm walking down the street, I seem to always fall in love with half of the women I meet. And there's more pretty girls than one. More pretty girls than one. Girls than one. We often exchange a smile. Sometimes we even touch. I never cease to be amazed that I can love so much. And there's more pretty girls than one. More pretty girls than one. Every town I ramble round, there's more pretty girls than one. Loving just can't be a sin. You can love without being wed. And every time you fall in love, you don't have to land in bed. And there's more pretty girls than one. More pretty girls than one. Every town I ramble round, there's more pretty girls than one. Found lots of love so far. There's lots more love in store. 'Cause love is something, if you give it away, you end up having more. And there's more pretty girls than one. More pretty girls than one. Every town I ramble round, there's more pretty girls than one.
That was the old folk song, More Pretty Girls Than One, as interpreted by Susan Grates on her 1984 album, Somewhere Between. I've got time for one more artist in this first hour, and her name is Mickey Wagner. The album I have by her, the only one I know of that she recorded, is called Infatuation, and was produced in San Francisco in 1981. Of course I picked the queerest song on the album, which is one called Normandy.
Touches my thigh and I spin in ecstasy. And she's calm and she's cool, so why do I do when she's near me? Is it love? Yes, I feel that. I get
Mickey Wagner, and Normandy. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more Very Queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's Queer Radio with Attitude.